This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Don't let them do that to you.
Lefty Pintos is here to celebrate all things queer and decidedly left of centre.
We took the children from their mothers.
For the pain of these stolen generations, we say sorry.
Each week we'll aim a non-mainstream spotlight to our community and get gritty with all kinds of titillating queer folk.
From artists, activists, freaks, and generally wayward but passionate peeps.
Say loud, say clear! Refugees are welcome here!
News, and music too.
And I heard it on the radio.
Hosted by Brian and Kat.
That's right, you're listening to Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Emma in the studio. We're in the hot seat this week, and we have a very special guest in Uncle Richard Franklin. I'm actually going to be upfront now and say I'm going to call him Uncle. He's been a man that's, been in my life for the last 20 or so years, I reckon. He's somebody that's been involved with activism. He's a playwright, he's a musician, a director, a filmmaker, a singer, and he's an advocate of the Advanced Hair Fusion Clinic for Aboriginal people. Being a baldy myself, like Uncle Richard, I'm kind of all for that cause, but we're going to be chatting to him this week. And the reason why we wanted to bring him in was he's got a play down at the Malthouse Theatre on at the moment until this Saturday called Walking Into the Bigness. And we've checked it out, haven't we, Emma? And I guess I just want to ask, what did you think of the show?
I thought, like everything that the Malthouse does, it's a really good production. It's an interesting, thought-provoking show that I'll definitely recommend that people get down there and check it out.
Yeah, it's sort of like, and I think Uncle Richard's really hit his mark on this one. Like, I've seen a few of his productions. Like, he's had Conversations with the Dead is one that I think La Mama presented a few years back, and he's had a few other pieces. I can't remember their names, but yeah, he's really hit his mark with this Walking Into the Bigness, and so we're going to be chatting to him, Uncle Richard Franklin, this week on Lefty Pinko, so stick around.
More of your favourite shows.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Emma here, and we're chatting to Uncle Richard Franklin, who is a playwright, a musician, a director, a man of many talents, and it's great to have you in here, Unc.
Oh, it's a real pleasure to be here.
Now, you've got, the premise of why we wanted to bring you in was to talk about your show, Walking Into the Bigness, but I actually want to talk to you about, some of the themes that come out in the show. And you bring up a lot of different things, like the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, grieving, death, injustice, human rights. Anger is also one of those emotions that comes out in it. And I guess, yeah, so what, when you wanted to start off that play or present it, what did you want to communicate with it all? Because it communicates a lot.
I think that the truth is I was bloody scared of it. I was scared of what I'd seen in my life, and scared of the injustices and how easy it was for people to hide. And my role has always been, or my credo, if you like, is when you've got art, you've got voice, and with voice comes freedom. With freedom comes responsibility. And a lot of our elders, black and white, fought for our freedom in a whole myriad of ways. And you know, I'm not totally free as an Aboriginal man in this country, but the freedom I've got I like to be responsible with. I think the basis of the play is about facilitating the voice of others. So while it's about Richard Franklin, it's really about us as a nation in many ways. Where do we stand? How do we stand? What is freedom for us? What is voice? What is our responsibility?
Emma, you saw the play on Saturday night, and I guess, yeah, I mean, and before we came into the studio tonight, you spoke about your perspective as a non-Indigenous person. I mean, yeah, do you want to maybe have a bit of a chat about that?
Yeah, there were
what you got from the play.
I really enjoyed it, but I was saying that I found it quite confronting in parts. My views on how our government historically and now mistreats Indigenous people is something that I feel strongly about. And there are a couple of points in the play that just really hit home, and I could tell that sort of resonated with the audience as well. Your time in the army, in particular, was the first scene where I could just sort of feel tension in the audience with that particular scene, and I was just sitting there thinking, I mean, throughout a lot of the play, that I just can't imagine what that must be like to be in that position.
I think that a lot of people end up in these situations, whether they're Aboriginal, whether they're gay, whether they're people from other minority or marginalised groups. We end up, discrimination in this country was at a peak period in the 80s and the 90s. I think one of the great things that is happening now, and I think we need to recognise this, is that places like the military are creating legislation and policies protecting people from marginalised groups, in fact encouraging them to join or be a part of. Now, a policy or a legislation is only as good as the attitude of the people that promote it or utilise it. And I think it's up to us to know these laws, to know these policies, and to use them against people who would act out in a discriminative manner towards people like ourselves. I think it's not only our duty to protect ourselves, it's our duty to protect our peers and facilitate that voice that way. You're right, it was bloody hard. It was awful growing up around that discrimination and seeing it. And it hammered home a whole heap of truths to me about the state this nation was in. But the most important thing for me was hope. When I see men like Brian, when I see people standing up to be counted, when I see that great courage, that great integrity, that great honour, I'm inspired. I'm inspired to keep fighting. We did a show just last night, and there was an elderly gentleman there. He said, as I walked in, he said, "It's not over for you, mate." He said, "Don't you bloody give up. You keep bloody well going." He said, "There's a lot to be done." And I was buggered. I was thinking, oh, geez, I just want to have a beer and sit in the bush, you know, have a bit of a chew on a kangaroo or something. But there is a lot of work to be done.
I guess, yeah, it does deal with some really heavy themes that are very, it seems very doom and gloom, but there is, just picking up on that hope, there's a real thread of hope through, I guess, honouring your mother, Auntie Tina. Just tell our audience and our listeners about your mother.
Oh, bloody tough as nails. Well, you know, her and I, we hitchhiked across the Nullarbor together, dead broke. Ran into my brother Wal at the Balladonia Roadhouse. That never made it into the play because we've only got a short amount of time to tell yarns. She lodged the Alcoa claim in the early 80s, took on a major mining company, her and Sandronis, cousins, and they fought this major mining company and won. We lost our house because of that, because... you know, that's what happens sometimes. It's the way the world spins. Raised six kids, lost two. One was taken. And keeps standing up and has this amazing quiet dignity about her that I couldn't match, I don't think, in a million years. You know, lives a quiet life now as an artist and just got shortlisted for the Victorian Indigenous Art Awards.
Oh, wow, yeah.
I hope she gets it.
Yeah. We'll keep our fingers crossed in here.
So you'll know on the 23rd, that'll be our last show, so she'll know Saturday. She's a pretty amazing person, what she's achieved. And it took a long time for me to reconcile the fact that we shifted around a lot, to understand why we did that and how difficult it must have been for her to hold what little we had together. I mean, you know, women in this country are treated pretty bad. Black women, coloured women, are even lower on that pecking order. Mm-hmm. So for her, in the 60s and 70s, with a mob of kids, a partner that's passed on, pretty amazing bloody job. And the assimilation policies were in full swing. And
it was sort of pre-support in terms of 67 and federal responsibilities for Indigenous affairs, yeah? So it's kind of, pretty formidable feat that your mother is.
Any woman from that era that single woman from that era just surviving is incredible. For a black woman to survive and achieve is amazing. Yeah. And I don't think we recognise that enough in society. I think we need to celebrate that. In fact, any playwrights out there listening, get off your bums and write a play about these amazing women.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
You're listening to Lefty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. It's Emma and Brian, and we're chatting to Uncle Richard Franklin. And I'm going to insist on calling him Uncle because that's just the way it is in here. But we'll be back after these announcements.
More of your favourite shows.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Emma and Brian, and we're chatting to Uncle Richard Franklin, a playwright who has his play Walking Into the Bigness down at the Malt House right now. It's on until this Saturday, but we saw the play last week, and it's an amazing piece of theatre that kind of builds on a lot of different themes. And I actually want to ask you, like, have you read, Germaine Greer's got this amazing essay called On Rage that talks about rage within the Aboriginal community, in particular among men. And when I saw the play, and yeah, I was amazed at your courage in dealing with anger and rage as an issue. And yeah, like Germaine's essay contextualizes it, I guess, in terms of dispossession, injustice, human rights, and the lack thereof in Aboriginal communities. But I guess, yeah, and your play brought that out. So why do you think it's important for people to hear stories of rage or anger or around Aboriginal affairs?
I think there's a process around called internalised colonialism, and it's about when you're on the bottom rung of the ladder and the rage and anger, if it goes up, you end up incarcerated. If you try and fight the oppressor too much, you end up incarcerated, you end up marginalised from society, you end up really damaged. But, you know, when you walk into a bar and you've got blokes that want to go boom bashing or coon kicking, or they're intimidating someone who's weaker than them, you can't stand aside and let that happen. You've got to stand up. I guess what I've learned over the years is I'm more effective in a whole heap of other ways. I mean, I won some awards in Black Hollywood and walked into a service station and being celebrated over there, and the guys and his son were in front of me, and the boy said to his dad, "Dad, look, it's that bong you don't like, the one in the papers." And the kid's being socially engineered.
Mm-hmm.
What rage and anger I had couldn't be dumped on him, and it couldn't be dumped on his dad in front of him, you know. So what do you do, you know? Do I get abusive? Do I yell? Where do you put that rage and that anger? When you see people disrespectful to your family, to your friends, to your peers, to your people. I mean, I remember marching past this studio years ago and getting spat on back in the 80s marches. And I remember the turnaround at that point when a police officer, this guy was abusing us, and I was sort of shielding people away from this guy, and this police officer walked straight over and confronted this guy. And it was a turn up for the books, because it indicated to me that there was a change coming. It might have only been small, but it was on the way. I think rage and anger is something that's within our communities. I think we, in the words of Steve Biko, the greatest weapon of the oppressors are the minds of the oppressed. It's us turning on ourselves. I think that's something we have to be very careful of. But I think there's ways that we can channel it now that are far more effective.
And art serves as a really nice vehicle for you in that sense. I mean, is that when you started to alleviate your anger, put through the arts?
Arts, community capacity building work. I mean, I guess a lot of people seeing I used my anger to protect people, but also to defend myself. So it wasn't just running out and beating people up. It was, there was a guy who said to me, "I know your breed better than you do, boy," you know, and... Mm-hmm. I had a personal rule that if people touched me or touched someone, physically tried to hurt me or physically tried to hurt someone around me that weren't able to defend themselves, then I'd protect them. That's, you know, I was allowed to stop them. I see it now. I see violence in the streets now, and it terrifies me where we're heading as a society. There's this unbridled anger. There's this fear and confusion out there. And I think that we need to rise up as a society to deal with it. I think we need to... People are dangerous when they don't feel safe. People are violent when they don't feel safe, or when they feel the need to protect themselves. So there's a whole heap of people out there that don't feel safe. And that has to come back to our leadership of this nation. Why don't we feel safe as a society?
How might you describe Australian culture from an Aboriginal perspective?
When I was young, I seen it as them and us. We were marginalised, we were placed in a corner, we were voiceless. A lot of people fought hard for a voice. People at the Tent Embassy in the 70s, people lobbying in 67 for constitutional change. The birth of many of our organisations in the 80s, many kids coming home. So it was very much them and us. What I see now is I see a lot of non-Aboriginal people reaching out in ways that they haven't before. I see a lot of inter-race marriages happening. I'm in awe of that. My little girl, the youngest, is her mum's Bulgarian Scottish, so we call my little one a Bulgarigine. So she's I see a change happening, and in some ways it's intimidating because there's doors opening now that weren't around when I was young. And it's intimidating because some of the things we fought for in relation to changing life expectancies and things like that are starting to happen. And why I say that's intimidating is because it means that society's undergoing a change, and I don't know where it's going to stop. I don't think it's fast enough, but I don't know where it's going to stop. I don't know whether we're going to end up in a situation where the Aboriginal voice disappears.
Do you think that it seems like your perceptions and views have evolved over time? Things are changing. You're obviously getting... I think those views, that sort of us against them, is that something that's still experienced, do you think, by the younger generation of Indigenous Australians?
There's a whole heap of diversity out there, which is incredible. It's absolutely beautiful. Like, there's 500 different Aboriginal nations and tribes, hundreds of different languages, and all many, many different views about who we are, what we are, where we're going, and where we need to go. There's a diversity that should be celebrated. There's also a class structure that's happening within the Aboriginal and Islander world. And that's very different as well. You know, there's people who are quite wealthy. There's people who own their houses. There's people who are long grass people or homeless. There's addicts. There's all these things in our society that there are in broader society. I think while there is change happening, we need to remember the cold hard facts. Our suicide rate is among the highest in the world. 10% of the prison is Aboriginal women, of the women's prison, and that's, in the last few years, it's risen by 56% or some incredible figure like that. We have 97% of Aboriginal people have experienced discrimination at least 8 times in a year. Those people that have undergone discrimination have severe psychological distress scores, which means that it's a lasting impact. Every time you're discriminated against, it knocks the crap out of you. We have an infant mortality rate, which is just shitful. You know, so we still have all of these things that we're facing. What we do have, however, is people who are skilled up. People, we have now have doctors, we have all types of ologists, and we have people fighting these issues on a multitude of levels. The load isn't being carried by a handful of people. It's being carried by lots. What's also beautiful about it is there's more non-Aboriginal people who are jumping across that cultural abyss. Even this play facilitates voice and empowers people to come on that journey.
Mm.
You're with Lifty Pinkos here on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Emma. We're chatting to Uncle Richard Franklin, and we'll be back after these announcements.
More of your favourite shows.
Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Joy 94.9. It's Lifty Pinkos with Emma and Brian, and we're chatting to Uncle Richard Franklin about his play Walking Into the Bigness. But I actually want to grill you about politics, because I know you've had a little bit of a flirt, is probably how I'd phrase it, in the political realm. But, I mean, you're a very political person, but, I mean, what do you think of politics within Australia?
I think we're in a different climate, people, my reading and my discussions with a lot of people, I'm informed that people don't have faith in the current government. They don't have faith in the alternatives. Many of the people that I talk to, and I'd say at least three quarters of the people I speak to, have no faith in the leadership of this country or where it's heading. They see close affiliations with parliamentarians and mining companies or large multinational companies. They see people like Joe Hockey, for instance, staying at his wife's home in Canberra and getting $270 a night. And then, you know, our poor are being told you've got to be poorer. Our single mums told, you know, you get work within 6 months once your child's over a certain age, all these types of things. And I think that we're being undervalued as a people. I think that a lot of our politicians are in a very high earning capacity area, and I think they lose touch. A lot of them are people with degrees in law, PhDs and so on, and I think they're removed from the battler. And I think this nation is about battlers. I think that while we're a very wealthy country, there's a whole heap of us that live on or below the poverty line. There's a whole heap of people who are impoverished. I think that our politicians, in many cases, are morally bankrupt. I think that they've excluded themselves from us. They see us as a problem. There's a president of a country who, in the South Americas, who sees himself as...
From Uruguay, yeah, Pepe, I forget his name, right. Full name, but yeah.
He serves the people. And yep. I think that when you see our politicians in suits that are thousands of dollars, I get the giggles, because those people aren't going to come to my house and have a cup of tea and talk to me about real issues. I'm going to have to deal with a whole heap of walls that they put up. I mean, I'm tempted to run for the Senate again, purely because I think that we, in order to help somebody run for the Senate, I think we need grassroots people in there. And I think we need, when I see them on TV, I don't know how other people, I'd be interested in how other people feel. When we see them bickering like bloody...
School children are more polite, more mature. Yeah.
I don't have a high opinion of our politicians. I'm very concerned about where our country's heading.
I guess in Indigenous affairs and leadership, I mean, under Howard, ATSIC was abolished, and it kind of, Indigenous representation, either love or hate ATSIC, it didn't become a federal concern. But I guess given the current Abbott government, how do you feel about Indigenous affairs and Indigenous leadership in the political realm federally?
We need a culturally safe pathway to a democratic process for Indigenous Australians. So, in other words, if we look at how the social structure of Aboriginal affairs, 1,500 generations was torn apart in less than 10 generations, and what the legacy that we as a nation have been left with, black and white, is to rebuild that somehow. So, you know, it comes back to the doctrines of self-management and self-determination. How do we rebuild that? Well, we need a democratic process that is representative, and that needs to be encouraged and facilitated. We have the National Congress. I think that needs to be marketed heavier, and I think that the structure's too complex. I think it needs to be much more simple, and I think it needs to represent us on a traditional basis as well. That's my personal opinion, but I think that's something that can happen. I think that we need an Elders Council here in Victoria. I'd like to see that, people elected from different communities, men and women. I'd like to see that being equal as well. And I'd like to see them having real cultural powers, powers to admonish, powers to build. And I'd like to see some real community capacity building ventures where we have a dispute resolution process in our cultural shape. I'd like to see those types of things. In fact, I know that the Health Service, the Aboriginal Health Service, is striving towards that at the moment.
Yeah, it's a great model, like just in terms of community control, and yeah, it came from a position of need and volunteerism, I guess, and
yeah, and just did.
Yeah, exactly. That's a thing, and they're like they've really refined their model based on rights. And
I'm just fascinated just to sit here and listen to your views on this, Richard. Really interesting. I mean, I fall into that category that you've talked about of being a bit disillusioned with. Both sides of politics at the moment, and the fact that we're largely represented by white men, I think, is clearly an issue.
It gets a bit worrying. How can you be represented if a person hasn't stepped across or even put their foot into the cultural abyss? And I don't know. I mean, I reckon one of the most important things you can do is go and listen to people. A bloke who was a great listener is a bloke called John Heldon Wooten QCAC. He was the Royal Commissioner that I worked with on the death in custody job in the 80s and early 90s. And I sat with him and I watched him listen. And, you know, he said, I picked him up at the airport and he said, well, what should we do? And I said, well, get rid of your tie and get hold of a jumper and we'll go for a drive and we'll go and visit some families. And that became the basis of his work was visiting family members of the deceased and sitting down and actually not listening, hearing. So it wasn't just listening, he was hearing. And he humanised the process. And he'd go there and there'd be cups of tea and a bit of a giggle and the terrible tears, lots and lots of tears, lots of great grief. I mean, we know that grief is love. Everyone knows that. And he took that on board. And I think that's what our politicians need to do. There needs to be home visits. There needs to be seeing how people live. I mean, Joe Hockey, in my opinion, he should try and live on the dole. Not for a couple of days, not for a week, but for a couple of months. He should actually experience that. He'll be in a good spot because he'll know he'll come back out of it and be financially wealthy again. But he needs to know what it's like to try and put in 40 job applications. How ludicrous is that? It's not thought out. It's said what that says is you, the poor, are a problem. It doesn't say that you're a people with a problem. It says you're a problem. And it's simply not the case. Australians, we carry great problems, and quite often we carry them with great dignity and great tenacity. And I think our politicians could do with a wage drop, and I think that they could do with seeing what it's like on the other side of the coin. One of the great things that Winston Churchill said during the Second World War was suggested, let's cut the arts so we can put more money into the war effort. And he turned around and said, well, what are we fighting for? So, you know, when this government cuts the arts, when they cut funding to the arts, when they cut funding to the poor, when they cut resources to the needy, it's a clear indication to me that they've lost touch.
You're with Lefty Pinkers on Joy 94.9. It's Brian and Emma, and we're chatting to Uncle Richard Franklin. We'll be back.
Joy 94.9.
You're back on Lefty Pinkers on Joy 94.9 with Brian and Emma.
And we're chatting to Uncle Richard Franklin here, and this is the last segment, so we're going to have to wrap things up fairly soon. But I guess, yeah, we've talked about, issues around politics, the heaviness that Indigenous affairs or Australian affairs can be couched in, but where is healing, or how might you suggest people go through a healing process in all this?
I think there's a whole heap of ways that we can heal. One is to be aware of what's going on out there. And it's a bit intimidating for people because, you know, we've got the super information highway, we've got, I don't know how many television stations, we've got Foxtel, then you've got movies, you've got all this information pouring in on people. And we live in the danger of becoming desensitized. In fact, you know, we read about an earthquake and we flip the page to look at a new handbag or something. My suggestion is to humanize what's been dehumanized. And start doing that within yourself. Find out what your local NGOs are doing. Find out ways you can contribute. And it may intrude on a bit of your time, but don't see it as an intrusion. See it as a bit of a gift. When there are marches or things, turn up. Find out what it's about. Find out who your local speakers are, what they're speaking about. If you spend an hour a week doing that type of research, or even a couple of hours a week, and then maybe another hour attending something like that, you're going to find that you're going to be contributing at a level that you don't normally contribute at. For you mob that are already out there contributing, find ways to bring in more colleagues. We seem to have lost that feistiness of marching. In the 80s, we had the Rock Against Racism concerts. They were brilliant, attended by thousands of people. 88, we marched across the bridge in Sydney. We marched all through here. And again, absolutely brilliant. We seem to have lost that edge of marching. We get outraged, but we get outraged on Facebook or other social media sites, and we that's where it begins and ends.
Why do you think that is? I mean, you mentioned the super the information superhighway. Do you think about politics? Like, I'm thinking of it, I just think of Howard often as being an amazingly strategic politician, or
Prime Minister.
Do you think he did damage to that cause, or? Yeah.
If you've got enough tucker on your plate, quite often you won't go hunting again. You know what I mean? It's but I think that we need to make people hungry for justice and for equity to stop that complacency. I think complacency is a really dangerous thing. I worry that if we remain complacent, we're going to see more tragedy in the world. In fact, we will see more tragedy in the world. We will see more people damaged. And that tragedy is not far from our doorstep. In fact, it's happening in this country now. Like I said earlier, you know, we've got that incredible, horrific suicide rate. We've got people incarcerated. And we're a very wealthy country, but there seems to be a population who's a marginalised group in this country, Aboriginal and Islander people, as an example, who are suffering at a great rate of knots. And I appeal to all Australians to stand up and do something about that. Improve your knowledge base. Get involved. Be part of the solution.
I mean, my experience is that people do care about some of these issues, but as you say, people need to learn more, and just updating on social media isn't enough. You need to get out there and you need to be visible and participate.
Yeah, and the information's there at the click of a button. You can go out and
Gary Foley. They call it slacktivism or something like that. But yeah, it's like, yeah.
Well, Gary Foley's website, you know. Or come along to this play that I'm doing, you know. And there's a whole heap of people in it. We've got two non-Aboriginals in the play and a whole heap of non-Aboriginal crew as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they've jumped over this cultural abyss like you wouldn't bloody believe.
They have, yeah. Because, I mean, just to give you our listeners a bit of a sense of the play, too, I guess it's all in your voice, your first-person voice, but you've given it to this group of actors who are a mix of mobs, like, you know, Indigenous from South, North, non-Indigenous. Yeah, like, where'd that decision come from? Was that...
Well, the two directors, Wayne Blair, who directed Sapphires, and Chris Mead, who is a dramaturg but also co-directs this. He's with MTC. And that's the way it was crafted. And it was like that in all the workshops that led up to it. And it just took on a life of its own in the end. It's quite exciting to see five actors playing various parts of my life, male, female, black, white.
Yeah, no, it's just a really nice thread that runs through it. And Tammy Anderson as your mother is hilarious. I mean, she always brings a great comic relief to anything that's quite heavy. And she's just like gold as that young kid and as your mother too, yeah.
Lots of giggles in the show. There are lots of giggles, listeners, but there's also, I think we've got about four shows left. There's also a bit of heaviness. There'll be a few tears. If you're one of those people that cry at Kleenex ads, for God's sake, either don't bloody come, or if you do, bring a lot of tissues. Quite often the cast are outside cuddling people at the end.
That's a kind of response that evokes. You've actually got a few standing ovations too, haven't you? Night I went there, it was a standing ovation. I don't know, Emma, did you mob stand up?
A few people did.
Yeah.
But you could... There was definitely a sense within the audience, and then, in the foyer afterwards, that it was something that really had... affected people. You got a sense of that during the play.
Last Saturday night there was a huge standing ovation and a couple of the others in between. But also we've been can I do an apology, an on-air apology? I was meant to go to the Boite and play some music for them on Saturday night. Now, Roger and Teresa, if you're listening, I just want to apologise because I just got overwhelmed by people trying to get out the door. And, you know, forgive me, listeners, but there was a bit of a red wine attack from some people as well.
So, oh, yeah, the old red wine attack.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, after two glasses, my hair grew back, so...
Yeah, Uncle Richard, an advocate of the Hair Fusing Clinic. But I guess we're going to have to wrap things up in here. You're listening to Joy 94.9. Yeah, get along to the Malt House and check out Walking Into the Bigness. It's on until this Saturday, the 23rd of August. Go to www.malthousetheatre.com.au. There's ticket details there. I reckon it's going to sell out this last week, yeah? Like, it's pretty popular, though. Audiences have been good.
It's heading down that path really quickly.
Yeah.
I think there's a few seats left in some of the shows. I'm not sure how you go closing night. Come along closing night because there's going to be lots of tears and cuddles and a few speeches, I think. Be a lot, a very community-minded sort of... The audience all sort of bond together in the giggling and the teary bits, so...
How do you get after a production, actually, like once it's all over? Do you...
Me, I've got to go home and fix things. I live up the bush and we've got 9 geese that are shitting everywhere. So, you know, it's a long, complicated story. There's a lot of a lot of goose shit around. Like, I've got to probably kill a couple and eat them. I would just build a bread oven, so I'm going to cook up some geese and a bit of kangaroo in the bread oven.
Beautiful. You've been listening to Lefty Pinkos on Joy 94.9. It's Emma and Brian, and we've been chatting to Uncle Richard Franklin. Thanks for visiting us in here, and all the best for the rest of the season.
Absolute honour. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.